This is Ask an Atheist with me, Sam Olvey, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. And I'm doing that just so I get the title in and Dave doesn't remind me that we changed the name of the show to include my name, which is the most egotistical thing I have ever done.
Yeah, except for you didn't do it.
That's true.
We all did it.
So joining me today is Dave. How you doing?
Hello, hello, hello.
And also joining me is Noel, for the first time, Noel George. How are you?
Hey, I'm good. How are you?
Fantastic. So we'll be talking about what you do in the second segment of the show and how it's a little bit terrifying for me. But hey, Dave, you saw something really awesome, apparently, at the Sounders game this week.
Oh, so every week at the Sounders game, there's this group of evangelical hellfire type preachers who carry big poster boards saying repent or you will go to hell, and they have, you know, shouting at the crowds and handing out pamphlets, and we all just kind of laugh at them. They're just kind of funny. So this week I show up and they have a repent mobile.
You showed me a picture.
Yes.
I'm gonna, if I can put the picture on this week's post?
Absolutely.
It is amazing.
It is amazing. It's a bright yellow pickup truck with big words that says Jesus saves, and it says repent, and a giant cross sticking out of the bed. And
I wonder if the cross also works as a CB antenna.
That'd be awesome. And I just, you know, I've my wife will not let me engage these people, no matter how much fun it would be.
Really?
But I know. But I really kind of want to ask them. It's like, that's a really nice truck. What'd that cost? How many wells for African villages could you have dug with that money? How many meals for homeless people could you have made with that money?
It reminds me of this thing I said on Mike's show, Radio versus the Martians. Mm-hmm. And I want to share it with Ask an Atheist because one thing I do is read about crazy people on Wikipedia. And this was a couple months ago now. But there's this guy, George Lincoln Rockwell, founder of the American Nazi Party.
Ooh, classy.
Yeah. But in his Wikipedia article, it says, when the Freedom Riders drove their campaign to desegregate bus stations in the Deep South, Rockwell secured a Volkswagen van and decorated it with white supremacist slogans, dubbing it the hate bus and personally driving it around to speaking engagements and party rallies.
Can I make a joke about this being a German car?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, here's the punchline. According to an FBI report on the American Nazi Party, the van was repossessed after a loan default. And the only thought I had when I read that was, imagine being that repo man. Imagine having to repossess that car. Oh, it's not me. Don't kill me. Don't kill me.
I don't want to drive that.
Yeah, boy. So keeping on the humor note, let's get to the first story today. I love this one. A Turkish TV host collapsed in laughter when a Muslim guest explained to her what sex acts were forbidden in Islam. Pelin Sift was interviewing theologian Ali Reza Demirkan on her show Other Agenda when Demirkan began explaining various sex acts that were considered haram or forbidden by the Quran. The host lost her composure when Demirkan declared that oral sex in advanced dimensions was not allowed. So, trial by fire, Noelle. I don't want anything in this one.
Well, I'm just wondering in what dimensions oral sex is allowed.
Right.
Yeah.
Is it allowed in Flatland?
That's a good question.
It must be, because it's Flatland and everything.
Is it allowed on the TimeCube website?
Is it allowed? Extra-dimensional sexual activities will educate you, stupid.
Well, I was actually the first one that jumped out to me is this. Is like, is advanced dimensions, that means no oral sex on the Enterprise when it's in warp.
Yeah.
Oh.
Or no. Well, actually, if you watch Doctor Who, you know why that's a bad idea. No sex in Minkowski space. You mentioned string theory, which is more.
Apparently only strings can have oral sex,
which is the only gross part about this, because string theory. Yeah, this is an amazing one. I don't even know advanced dimensions. I mean, clearly that's a euphemism for something.
Yeah.
I don't know what it's a euphemism for.
Yeah, it's just all kind of crazy. Who knows?
And I just love the idea of like this is a proper response to these really absurdist things. To have the host just bust out laughing. It's like, you're absurd.
Right.
Like, we need more of this. Hosts laughing at the people who make these claims.
Agreed.
Well, speaking of laughing, let's take it to an email. We have Joshua from Birmingham, England. And it is Birmingham, not Birmingham. And it's, I disagree with atheism in its entirety because God does exist. He only wants you to make your life better, help you get more out of life, and help you reach your potential.
I just want to go through that sentence with a red pen and go, Wrong, 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 wrong.
Citation needed.
Yeah, citation needed. Yeah, so anybody want to take this one up?
It's hard to take on because there's really no argument there. I disagree with atheism in its entirety because God does exist. There's nothing to
so perhaps
refute.
This is, yeah, so perhaps I should have responded with, well, thank you for that, I guess.
Yeah, it's like, do you think this is going to change our mind? That's what I'm really curious. It's like, is this an argument that you think is compelling enough to, like, okay, I'm done with atheism.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
This one guy from Birmingham. Take that. But this one guy says God exists. So, okay, I guess I was wrong.
Yeah, this like 5-year odyssey on the radio is over. Goodbye, everybody!
It's like we don't hear the same arguments over and over again. Like, everyone who argues with us or says something thinks that they're telling us something new and surprising, or maybe if we hear it from them, it's going to make some big difference because they receive the light of God from their magic whatever, and it's just, there's no...
Everybody thinks they have the magic words and are revolutionaries.
Exactly.
And when you have an outlier opinion, you hear the same things every time. Although, we keep hearing the same things every time. Ever since I wrote the Pascal's Wager
button... I was going to say, are you thinking what I'm thinking?
We haven't gotten a Pascal's Wager email in like a year and a half.
Hit the button. Don't let it go to waste.
Maybe you need to write a God doesn't exist, God exists button.
Yeah. Like, all
what's
right.
your point?
You want to hear
you
want to hear the button?
Here?
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, here we go.
Wager assumes a false equivalency.
See, the idea is that whenever we get a Pascal's Wager button, I bring in this robotic voice and just talk over it so that we're not wasting time. But then I wrote this thing. It's right here on my board.
Likely than the assumption.
And we haven't gotten a Pascal's Wager email since. So I guess, well, what if I had to write another button to so that we would stop getting arguments,
what do we get all the time?
What do we get all the time?
I feel like it's...
You're evil.
This. God exists.
God exists. You know. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's the natural... Next
end of argument.
Button.
God exists.
Just be a robotic voice that says citation needed, just like you guys said.
Citation needed.
Yeah.
Perfect.
No, what I really like about this one, though, is I disagree with atheism in its entirety because God does exist. Okay, we get that one all the time. He only wants you to make your life better, help you get more out of life, and help you reach your potential. Because, you know, God is one of those, like, those self-help fitness guru guys, you know, who helps you... with hot stone massage, or he's a Scientologist, because it makes him sound like an intergalactic L. Ron Hubbard, which is to say, L. Ron Hubbard.
I want to meet Xenu.
I'd like to meet Xenu.
That'd be cool.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is God going to make everyone reach their potential all at the same time? Like, what if somebody has the potential to be the best singer on the planet, and somebody else has the potential to be the best singer on the planet? How is God going to make everyone reach their best potential all at the same time? I think God has favorites.
Yeah. And this definitely takes us right back into, you know, the problem of evil territory, which is, if God just wants to help me make my life better, what's with all the dead children?
Yeah.
I mean, it's an easy one, but...
What if somebody's life better conflicts with somebody else's life being better? Then you have to choose.
Yeah.
And who is it that's going to choose? Well, God is going to choose, because it's God, and God makes all the choices. But then there's free will.
Yeah.
So then we can invoke free will when it's convenient. Who knows?
Yeah, it's you know, if God wants you to be better, and you need a liver transplant because you have cirrhosis, that means, like, somebody's got to die or something.
Yeah.
And that's kind of a bad scene.
Well, and I think if you want to take it from the other angle, like, my life is great. You know, I spend my life, every week I help write a show trying to convince people that God doesn't exist, and I had a blog, and I make these arguments. If God exists, he would never let me be this happy.
Really?
Like, why wasn't I struck down with cancer yet?
Oh.
But if that's how God works...
I don't know. Like, have you seen the statistics? That might not be something you want to say. And I'm speaking purely only statistically.
I quit smoking like a year and a half ago.
Oh, hey.
Thank you.
Yeah.
But no, it's just like... my life is very fulfilled. I am very happy. I love where I'm at in the world. And if this argument that God only wants you to be happy... Well, I did it without God.
Mm-hmm.
I'm happy. I'm good.
Yeah.
So,
and I'm trying to do the same thing these days. So one more quick email, just about to go to a break. This is Cody from Huntington, West Virginia, who writes, why can't the atheists have a war over religion like all other religions have? And my first thought when I saw this was, dude, have you seen YouTube? Because that's kind of what YouTube is. I mean, if you look at all the atheist stuff on YouTube, they're kind of fighting all the time. Do you guys have a response for this one, or?
I really feel like we don't want to kill people. We just want to change their minds.
Right.
You don't change minds with war. You actually are more likely to
kill
people.
Kill people, but also the people who survive, you're going to set their opinion in stone because they're not going to want to argue, or they're not going to believe what you say just because you killed other friends. On the contrary.
The track record for conversion by warfare isn't particularly good. I'm not saying it hasn't worked, but it isn't, I guess it isn't great.
Yeah, conversion by occupation is usually much more effective.
Right.
So.
Well, this is the point where I think somebody would bring up the communists at this point, I think.
Well, I mean, the Christians did take over a lot of the world through
warfare.
Religious warfare. So, you know, it's... You can answer this question in a facetious way. Is it a facetious question or is it a serious question? We could answer it one of two ways.
Well, I don't think being an atheist alone is enough to make you not want to convert people by warfare. Why do we not? Because those people haven't shown up yet? I don't know. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. We're going to head into a break. When we come back, we're going to talk to Noelle about what she does and the cool stuff happening where I work.
Queen of England, you must give me your lunch money.
Why?
Because it'll explode.
I don't know.
I'm the Queen of England. I know things.
Well, that makes sense. Here you go.
Wait, Billy. Just because an authority says it doesn't make it true. Come to Camp Quest Northwest, where you'll learn critical thinking and science in a fun-filled week-long nature camp.
No!
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. The devil is not real.
I'm melting!
Imagine tropical waters, warm sandy beaches, friendly people, incredible weather. The English-speaking Caribbean island nation of St. Lucia awaits. Don Summers and his team at Professional Realty Group are ready to assist you. Whether you're looking for an investment, a place to retire, or a killer vacation property, St. Lucia has homes in all price ranges starting at $110,000. Call Don at 780-237-4718 and check out dndrealty.ca.
At Puget Sound Celebrant Service, we want to be your secular wedding officiant. We are committed to serving the Puget Sound region and work to ensure your special day is all about you. Robert, a certified humanist celebrant with the Humanist Society, specializes in secular weddings and customizes ceremonies to fit your needs. To commemorate your special day, each couple married by Robert will receive a one-year membership to the American Humanist Association. Find out more at PugetSoundCelebrant.com.
You can advertise on Ask an Atheist on the radio, on our website, and in our podcast. People just like you who have the same interests are listening right now, just like you are, and thousands will download this podcast and listen to it later. If you have a product, service, or idea to sell, people here in the Pacific Northwest and people around the world, thousands will hear your message. Let us help you sell your product, service, or idea. Contact us at advertising@askanatheist.tv. That's advertising@askanatheist.tv.
48 hours, 24 hours, 10 minutes to go.
The motorcade appears to have stopped, and yes, it appears as though the governor is getting out now. It's hard to see. My God, the rain it's coming down in sheets. I've never seen anything like this. There must be tens of thousands of people out here right now. The streets are shut down. Okay, it appears the governor is making his way toward the convention center. No one knows what he's going to say. The crowd is pushing forward through the storm. The Secret Service is struggling to hold them back. God!
Zero. For your consideration, we present Convention and its subject, the nominee. ANNEXRadio.com. Now on iTunes and Stitcher.
I'm Mike Gillis.
And I'm Casey Doran, and we want to ask you an important question.
Are you sick and tired of other panel discussion shows wasting your time droning on and on about foreign policy, economics, and human rights?
Or do you want to hear conversations about things that actually matter?
We host a podcast called Radio Versus the Martians. Every month we gather a panel of our nation's finest minds and plunge a rusty prison shank into the heart of tough questions that have an impact on the lives of real people like you.
Like, are drivers required to pull over for the Ghostbusters?
Is United Federation of Planets actually an oppressive dictatorship run by guidance counselors?
Is Arnold Schwarzenegger secretly a genius?
And are we being mean when we laugh at movies that are so bad they're good?
So write your congressman and let them know that Radio Versus the Martians is available on iTunes, Stitcher, and on RadioVersusTheMartians.com.
Need a break from the theistic world?
Live in the Seattle area?
Like the Flying Spaghetti Monster?
Whether you're an ardent non-believer, steadfast agnostic, or marauding Pastafarian, check out the award-winning nonprofit organization Seattle Atheists.
Socialize at the Third Thursday Meetup, attend lectures, come camping, donate blood.
Connect at SeattleAtheists.org.
Seattle Atheists, we believe in you.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist with Sam Mulvey. Sam has stepped out for just a moment because we are sitting down. We're talking with Noelle George and about her work at the Foundation Beyond Belief. And Becky's here with us.
Yes, it's wonderful to be here this segment. It's wonderful to be in the studio with you, Noelle.
Thank you.
Noelle, you are currently the executive director of Foundation Beyond Belief, but that's not where you started.
Right. I actually started my own charity in 2009 called Secular Center, and we were around secular volunteering. It was in Texas, and we pretty much went around to different groups, tried to get them to do volunteering in the name of atheism, for various reasons, one of which being that it's good to do good things, and another of which being that if we're atheists are out there doing good things, then it's harder for people to have such a negative image of us. So I started the Secular Center in 2009, and in 2011, I rolled Secular Center into Foundation Beyond Belief and started working with Dale McGowan.
Nice. What's it like doing secular charity work in Texas? That's got to be tough.
Yeah, there was definitely some challenges, some people that didn't want us to volunteer, and I can tell more stories about that later if we have time.
Yeah, definitely.
We definitely have time. So now with Foundation Beyond Belief, with Secular Center and working with Dale McGowan in Foundation Beyond Belief, you've actually developed three distinct areas of the foundation, or is that four now?
Right. We actually have four areas now. We have the Humanist Giving Program. We have the Beyond Belief Network, which is what Secular Center became. We have the Humanist Service Corps, which is with Connor Robinson as the former Pathfinders Project. And we have the Humanist Disaster Recovery Program, which Rebecca Vitzmoon, which I think many of your listeners are familiar with, is involved with disaster recovery teams. And we also do disaster recovery drives within that program. So
in terms of the philanthropic charitable giving, you've got generally a program where every quarter there's new beneficiaries that are named, right?
Right. That's the Humanist Giving Program.
And there's, can you talk a little bit about the different areas that Foundation Beyond Belief has chosen to highlight in terms of ways to give back to our world?
Well, through the Humanist Giving Program, we have five beneficiary categories. We have poverty and health, human rights, challenge the gap, education, and natural world. And each quarter, we pick a charity within what each of those categories. We vet them, we select them, and then our members give monthly to those charities. And then we give them grants at the end of the quarter.
So something like natural world, that would be environmental causes, maybe making sure that there's environmental remediation that's gone on in a polluted area, maybe making sure that there's water that's available that's clean, or forestry, things like that.
Right. Companion animal causes, wildlife causes, endangered animals, so on and so forth. That's
And then health and poverty and things like that, those are pretty self-explanatory. But this challenge the gap, can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, I can. Challenge the Gap is a category that was started after the foundation began, and it's meant to provide an avenue for people that are interested in working with religious organizations that are also doing good work. The organizations that we vet for Challenge the Gap have a religious identity, but they don't proselytize in their work. They work for the greater good. So it's something like a Sikh organization that might work in the area of justice, or a Quaker organization that might work in the area of peace. There are very strict vetting requirements for those organizations before we select them.
What does that vetting process look like?
The vetting process is quite involved. We have an online venue that we use for it, and a form, and basically we have to check that they're a 501c3. We check that they don't proselytize if they're a Challenge the Gap or religious organization. We check their financials. We check the type of work that they're doing, whether it's evidence-based, whether it's making a difference, just all sorts of different areas that we check to make sure that the charity is worth our support.
Yeah. I'm really curious about this. This is interesting. What sort of reaction do you get when you reach out to these organizations? Have you ever had anybody who say, we don't want to be a part of your foundation? Like,
I don't think that through the Humanist Giving program we've ever had anybody say, I don't want your money. So, but I am fairly new as executive director with Foundation Beyond Belief. I just started in this role in June, so there may have been some before I was involved. I definitely know that there have been some organizations that have kind of resisted. We had an issue with the American Cancer Society when we wanted to do something with them, and there was a lot of, it wasn't a direct, we don't want your money, but there was definitely a lot of evasion and we can't do this in the way that you want us to, and so on and so forth. So, and I've personally had organizations that I've wanted to volunteer at through the Secular Center say, we don't want atheists coming here.
Right, right. That's rough.
So given that, why would there be atheists that would want to contribute philanthropically or volunteering with religious organizations?
Well, I think it really, the reason why it's called Challenge the Gap is because it really bridges that divide between the religious and the non-religious. And I think when religious people are working for the greater good and they're not proselytizing, they're showing that they can make a difference in the world. And we want to make a difference in the world, too, at Foundation Beyond Belief. We want to make a positive, significant difference in the world. And we can show that we are in it for the greater good by kind of working with these organizations in partnership and making sure that we're supporting their work. So we can separate, you are proselytizing and doing religious work versus you are religious, but you are working for the greater good.
Mm-hmm.
So sort of just as humanists or from an atheistic worldview might have a humanist identity that would drive their charitable work. We recognize also that religious people would have that identity, but drives them to do charitable work.
Right. As long as it's non-proselytizing and that they're working for the greater good, as in they're not working specifically to promote Christians, to help Christians or to help Muslims or so on and so forth. They're working for everyone.
Now, every quarter, you don't actually do the five or four areas of compassionate giving. Sometimes there's that compassionate impact grant, and that's a little different. Can you tell us about that?
It is a little different. We've started that, I believe, in December of 2014. And what we do is we pick one organization, and instead of having five categories and five organizations, we pick one organization and we give all of the member contributions to that organization. And the reason that we do that is because we feel that a capacity building kind of larger grant can help that organization in a greater way than kind of spreading out the money. And it, research has shown that that's the case, that if you give a big grant to one organization, it's actually a more efficient use of your money than if you give a bunch of small grants to a bunch of different organizations. And there are reasons that we give small grants as well. But to make sure that we're allowing an organization to really benefit from the full impact that our members can provide, we occasionally do the Compassionate Impact Grant.
So this quarter, who are awardees or recipients?
In quarter two, it was a Compassionate Impact Grant, and the awardee was Starfish. They do work in Guatemala with Native girls and educate them and help them achieve leadership roles and kind of move further than maybe the circumstances would allow otherwise. This quarter, let's see if I can remember them all. We have Community Change Incorporated, which does anti-racism education and advocacy. We have Artists for Humanity, which does brings awareness to students that are making art projects, and they make art projects basically to raise awareness for charity. And then who else do we have? I don't know if I can remember everybody.
We have our Natural World. Are we talking about water? Are we talking about reforestation?
I believe we have Pure Earth as Natural World, and I'm not as familiar with them as I am some of the others.
So you're new to the executive director position, but you've been in the organization for how many years now? Are we talking three?
Since 2011.
Okay, so a good chunk of the time that Foundation Beyond Belief has been around. What was your role prior to becoming executive director?
Prior to becoming executive director, I was the director of special projects, and I worked on just various initiatives of the foundation, FBB Australia being one of them. We're taking over the world and expanding into Australia, and that's very exciting. Some other projects were our annual conference and reaching out to other organizations to partner with us on some of our initiatives. And then before that, I was the operations manager, and I worked under Dale to kind of manage the employees of the foundation. He was taking a sabbatical, and I basically just kind of managed the employees and did all the things that an operations manager would do.
So how does that path feel like? You come into the organization with your own charity giving sort of merged in with them, and then you sort of work your way up till suddenly now you're in charge. You're the one.
How does it feel?
Yeah, how does that feel? Like, what's that journey like?
It's felt very natural throughout the time. It's been, you know, when I formed Secular Center, it was before I had my daughter, and I had my daughter in 2011. So that was around the time that I merged the organization into Foundation Beyond Belief. And I did that kind of for personal reasons, too, because here I have a new baby and I'm trying to run an organization. And it's kind of, and then I had the opportunity to merge it with Foundation Beyond Belief and talk with Dale, and just love Dale, loved his ideas. We had synergy on a lot of our visions, and it just felt like that was something that the foundation wanted to do anyway, was to create a volunteering aspect. So the humanist giving part came first, and then the volunteering part came second. Mm-hmm. And so it was a very natural transition, and it's felt that way through the whole time. You know, as I've been wanting to take on more responsibility, it's been, the opportunities have presented themselves, and so it's been very natural.
Oh, good, good.
I love that you say that we're taking over the world, not just with philanthropic giving in Australia, but one of the newer projects, the Humanist Service Corps. That's a really, really interesting idea. And, you know, we've been looking at getting Connor in to talk about that and his experience in particular. But sort of you had a pilot year where basically, like, it, from what I can tell, sort of like the religious mission trips.
Yes. And there was an interesting comparison to that, because the This is the Pathfinders project, which happened last year. And there was a very interesting thing that happened with the Pathfinders, which there were four volunteers and they went to various different locations around the world and kind of evaluated the locations to see if there was some that could support a longer term investment. And at one point they were coming out of, I'm not sure if it was the Dominican Republic or some other country down there in Latin America, but they were flying out and there was a group of missionaries that were flying in or that were flying out as well. And the Pathfinders are just scraggly and dirty and stinky and, you know, no haircuts. And the missionaries had their matching t-shirts and they were all clean and they looked nice. And, you know, they talked with each other and the missionaries had been, you know, doing their missionary work, which was proselytizing, building churches or something. And the Pathfinders had been doing their work, which was building latrines, you know, basically building toilets in the Dominican Republic or Ecuador or wherever. And the contrast between how those organizations looked and what they were doing was so strong. It was really kind of an incredible moment in time, a snapshot of, you know, the difference in philosophy.
Right. And there's, I have heard stories, and I don't have one in front of me, unfortunately, but of what is almost called mission tourism, where it's just, it's mission groups will go to somewhere and they're not actually doing any help. Like, they may do some construction work, but then some other people who actually know what they're doing with construction have to come in behind them and fix everything that they did. And so I like the idea. It's like, no, we're talking about the help first. Like, this is not about the people going. This is about the people we're serving.
Right.
And I think that's incredibly important.
Right. And it's really important to make sure that volunteer work overseas is not voluntourism, it's called.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there's a word for that. It's voluntourism. And the way that you can do that is by making sure that what you're doing is sustainable. It's not taking jobs away from people who are local who can do those types of roles. And, you know, it takes very careful planning and vetting and very clear definition of the roles that the volunteers are going to be doing to make sure that they are actually helping and not just doing something that someone else can be taught to do. So with the Humanist Service Corps, Connor just got back from a month in Ghana where he worked with our partner organization, Songtaba, and made sure to clearly define the roles that we're going to be doing, making sure that we're going to be doing things that are actually helpful and sustainable and so on and so forth, and not things that are going to be taking jobs away or things that are going to be not sustainable. So we come in and do something and then, you know, a month later, everything falls apart because right. There's nobody there with the expertise to do what we would need to do, what we would be doing there. So it's very important. And we've spent a lot of time planning to make sure that that's what happens.
Right.
You know, I think that one thing that really is important to people when they figure out where they're going to be giving philanthropically is how much sort of that percentage of what goes to the charity work versus what goes to overhead. And sometimes it can be a little bit misleading where you say, I want to donate to a charity where everything goes to charity versus I want to donate to a charity where, you know, 2/3 of my monies go to fund operations. Can you explain sort of Foundation Beyond Belief's philosophy on that?
Yeah, you have to be really careful about that because there are certain organizations that have a lot of overhead. Foundation Beyond Belief is a very new organization. It started in 2009. And we're a very flat organization. I think it's something like 80% of our donations go to programs and not to administrative. But the key thing with the Humanist Giving Program, which is when members join, they give monthly, and that's where their donation goes to the Humanist Giving Program. We pass 100% of that through to the charities.
Right.
So none of the money, we don't keep any of that money for overhead. The way that we get our funding for operational costs is through grants and through direct donations to the foundation. So if people want to support us, they can choose various different ways. Either they want to support us by becoming a member, which means that we're adding their donation to a pool of donations from other humanists and atheists, and we're giving those directly to the beneficiaries. We're doing that you know, as humanists together to make a greater impact together than we could alone. Or they can support us by donating directly to the foundation, donating as a Foundation 50 member, which is giving $50 or more a month to the foundation's operational costs. We try to make it really easy for people to support us.
I'm curious about something because I think I've read this. You would be able to answer this better than I. There is the opposite problem of charities who spend too much on overhead and very small amount of money is actually getting to the projects. But there's also the problem of people spending not enough. Like 99% of the donations are going to an organization or to giving, but they don't have the infrastructure to actually properly use that.
Right. That is a key issue, and that's definitely something that we evaluate in our charities. And with us as a foundation, we are very careful about that.
Good, good.
Noel, it's been really wonderful hearing from you about Foundation Beyond Belief in particular. We'll have you back in our third segment talking a little bit more about atheists and humanist news and things like that. This has been an awesome segment with Dave, Noel, and Becky. And we'll hear back.
Next, me and Noel are going to fight.
Yeah.
Looking to buy or sell a home or other property in Edmonton, Alberta, or surrounding areas? Demand a professional and call Don Summers of Professional Realty Group at 780-237-4718 or visit dndrealty.ca and discover how he works with you to achieve your goals, save you time, and protect your investment. Don Summers of Professional Realty Group. It's time you hired a professional.
So, picking you up at 8 tonight?
Sure.
How do I get to your place again?
Get off the freeway, turn left at the burger joint, past the Humanist Center, right at the...
What? Humanist Center?
Yeah, you know, the place where freethinkers have their meetings, hold events, access the resource library, drop their kids off for daycare.
This could be you and your friends in the near future. Contribute to the Humanists of Washington Humanist Center Fund to establish a physical home for freethinkers in the Puget Sound. Go to humanistsofwashington.org and contribute today. That's humanistsofwashington.org.
Ask an Atheist may have gone on the road, but we're not making big bucks.
We still need to keep the lights on, and 95% of our costs are for airtime alone.
That's why we need your contributions.
If you've got something to advertise, consider Ask an Atheist in your ad budget.
Our listener Peggy said it best. Step up and contribute to keep secular voices on the air. For $5, you could have a latte or a moment of science.
Take on Peggy's challenge and contribute today.
For details, go to Ask an Atheist.tv or contribute directly via PayPal to paypal@askanatheist.tv.
Welcome back. It's me. I'm back. This is Ask an Atheist with me. 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. I know the interview ended kind of pretty quick, but if you want to find out more about Foundation Beyond Belief, you can go to foundationbeyondbelief.org. And we have some people to thank here at Ask an Atheist. Well, actually, person to thank. And it's one of our perennials, Rick from Elma. How you doing?
Hey, Rick.
Rick from Elma met Peggy's challenge. That's the challenge to listeners of Ask an Atheist by Peggy from Kent to help keep the lights on here at Ask an Atheist. If you would like to contribute, you can go to askanatheist.tv, click on the yellow button on the right-hand side. Every dollar you give us goes directly towards show production. All right, so Boy Scouts. This is an interesting one. Leaders of the Boy Scouts of America approved a resolution that would end the ban on gay scout leaders. The executive committee of the BSA voted unanimously to change the policy that barred homosexuals from being scout leaders. The rule change doesn't guarantee gay leaders positions, but rather allows each troop to decide for themselves if they will allow it. The resolution will now go to the group's National Executive Board for ratification. One leader noted that it would be unprecedented for the board not to ratify a unanimously approved decision by the committee. There's more, but let's talk about this for now. I guess a step in the right direction?
It's definitely a step in the right direction. It's, I think they're trying to pull a PR move. They want to pretend like this was their idea all the time, and
right.
they're very, you know, willingly doing this. When in fact, the head of Boy Scouts of America, Robert Gates. Yes, that Robert Gates.
Yeah.
You're all like, wait, that one? No, yeah, really.
Surprise.
But he has made it clear that he's doing this under duress. He's afraid that down the line he's going to be forced to do this. And not only is he going to be forced to do this, but he's going to be forced to do this and other things, and he doesn't want to do that. So he's basically like throwing this in voluntarily so he can protect the organization as he likes it.
Yeah, I pretty much don't think it's a step in the right direction, because it may be a small step, but it's opening the door toward discrimination. It's opening the door for local groups to basically say you're allowed or you're not allowed. And I think the Boy Scouts of America is taking a pretty cowardly backward step by saying, you know what, we think that this is going to be a problem for us, so we don't want to get involved. So we're basically going to be Switzerland and make the local troops keep this decision. And I think it just opens up a whole bunch of problems.
I think it's even a little worse than Switzerland in that they're trying to have it both ways. Where it's popular to allow gay scout leaders, they're going to allow it. And where it's popular to discriminate, they're going to discriminate. They want to have it both ways.
Yeah, they're trying to have their cake and eat it too.
Yeah, and well, here's the second, you know,
Before you get to the second, I do want to say, I think, you know, yes, it's a half step, but I think a half step is better than no step at all. I would rather you open at least the troops who want to open up their own leadership roles to gay individuals is better than saying across the board you can't do it, which is where we were before. And this reminds me of Don't Ask, Don't Tell back in the 90s when that was passed. You know, people rail on that like it was a huge mistake, but at the time the choice was Don't Ask, Don't Tell or gays are banned from the military.
I think that's the key word here. In the 90s. That's the key phrase. We're not making a decision 90s. About that. Mm-hmm. Would have been a half step forward in 1995. It's 20 years later now. That's not a half step. That's not even a quarter step. That's not a step. That's just being politically slimy.
And is it really worth it for the troops that will allow gay leaders? Is it really worth it for the harm that the troops that aren't going to allow gay leaders, the harm that those people are going to experience? Because if you think about it, as a queer person, as a gay person who, you know, wants to lead their kids' troop and then are told that they can't do it because they're gay, it's incredibly demoralizing. You know, they might not even allow the kid in the troop altogether. You just don't know what kind of leeway they're going to give to the people.
I think to that one specifically, they've already blanketly said that gay kids are allowed in.
Yeah, they did make that decision.
I think they made that decision 3 years ago.
But for the parents that want to participate with their kids and then don't feel welcome because they're not allowed to be a leader, that could make them not feel welcome in the troop. Like, why would you want your kid to participate in a troop where they're discriminating against the parent as the leader and splitting up the family? You know, that's hurtful. Right. And because that is so hurtful and can be so harmful, I think that the harm of this possible decision, this decision that's possible, outweighs the good of a few troops being allowed.
I'm going to drop the other side of the coin this one, okay, and then hand it to you. President of the BSA, Robert Gates, Robert Gates, says that if they wait for the courts to act, they could end up with a broad ruling that could forbid any kind of membership standard, including their foundational belief in our duty to God. So so part of the reason they're making this decision is so that they can continue leaving atheists out.
That's true. In
the 2014 annual report, the BSA reported that the membership has fallen to 2.3 million, a drop of nearly 14% in just 2 years. There is no progressive, there's no positive change to be had here. I really don't see it.
I think that it's still, you know, I agree. And they're like I was saying at the top, they are doing this specifically so they don't have to allow atheists in the future.
Yeah.
You know, this, and that bothers me, but I still feel like having some troops who have gay leaders is better than no troops at all. It is a small step. It's not the greatest step, but it is still a step.
Yeah, I just look at it from both sides of the coin, where you have some troops that are allowed to have gay leaders, but then you have the other troops that are going to have, you know, families who can't participate in the way that they want. And, you know, maybe it's just have to wait and see how harmful this policy really does end up, because the country is changing, the SCOTUS ruling and everything. You know, although there's still a lot of negative things out there for queer people, I think that things are, as a whole, getting better.
So I'm going to bring up another news story, not to change the subject, because it's very closely related. The Girl Scouts of Western Washington refused a donation of $100,000 because it came with a demand that the money would not be used to support transgender girls. Local leaders then started a fundraising campaign to make up some of the lost funds. Currently, the fundraiser has raised over three times the amount originally donated.
Wow.
Kate Dabe, a council vice president, said that they were expecting a 30-day campaign and were thrilled to find the full amount made in a single day. I think the context here between what the Boy Scouts are doing and what the Girl Scouts are doing really kind of underscores what we're saying, is that there's no, I don't even see this as a half step. I think this is just political maneuvering.
It's political maneuvering, but it's still political maneuvering that allows gay leaders in some situations.
Does
but
it?
He's only doing it because he doesn't want to be forced into a corner later.
Yes, and I understand.
I'll even go you one further and say that this doesn't really change anything, because it became very clear, at least here in Western Washington, in the places where they would be allowed and not discriminated against, that local troops were just going to ignore that rule. They right. They started making that claim. So they're kind of, this isn't progress. This is a political fiat.
You haven't convinced me of that, because you're still having it opened up to gay leaders, which wasn't allowed before across the board. Not allowed. No one could have it.
Not
even
true.
If your troop wanted a gay
not
leader.
Not true.
Yeah.
Not true.
I don't think it's true either. It still would happen.
Yeah, because I don't think there's actually any change happening here at all, because this is just acknowledging what already exists.
And I'm not convinced of that.
Has there been any cases in the last few years that the national organization has come in and said, you have a gay leader and they have to step down? I don't know that, because I don't.
I think if that happened, either. Given how much we report on the Boy Scouts, I think if that happened, we'd hear about it.
Right. And the thing is, you know, basically what they're doing is looking the other way.
I'll have to look, though.
And now they're officially looking the other way.
But getting back to the good news about the Girl Scouts, I do want to say updated numbers. I just went to the Indiegogo site myself, and they have raised $334,777. And there's still 10 days to donate. If you want to go,
I'll include a link.
Look up Indiegogo.
Yeah.
Girl Scouts. You'll find it. It's that is, you know, I'm, you know, bravo.
Yeah, indeed.
Well done.
That is the way you do it.
So.
And that is unprecedented, I would say. I mean, that those kind of donations don't, you know, from working with nonprofits for the past few years, it's difficult to get donations. So there's a lot of places where people's money can go.
Yeah.
And so I think that it's really, you know, well done them and great outcome.
I agree.
That's one we could definitely agree on.
Yeah, there's definitely a silver lining there. So why don't we go from one idea that apparently we disagree on to another one. And this comes to us from Jim from the greater Chicago area. Hey. A few years ago, I stayed up late at a convention in one of the hotel lobbies chatting with a friend who is Christian and a Freemason. He told me that the first question asked of anyone seeking membership is, to paraphrase, do you believe in a higher power? He explained that they want to know that if you swear an oath, you believe in something greater than you that you can swear by, so you'll keep your word. He didn't believe me when I told him about Matthew 5:34-37 that forbids swearing of oaths. Why do people think it's wholesome to swear on the very book that tells them not to swear on anything, and that no one seems to be familiar with this passage? Dave included the passage here, which reads, "But I tell you, do not swear an oath at all, either by heaven, for it is God's throne, or by earth, for it is his footstool." Ew. or by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king. And do not swear by your head, for you cannot make even one hair white or black. All you need to say is simply yes or no. Anything beyond this comes from evil.
We need Mike to do his Steve voice.
So, oaths.
Yeah, I think that there's no guarantee that anyone's going to keep an oath, whether they swear it on something or not. I mean, people get married under the eyes of God all the time, and then they get divorced, and people swear on the Bible in court, and then they commit
perjury.
Perjury. Yeah. Thank you.
No problem.
And so, you know, what this really makes me think about is that how people keep their oaths and why they keep their oaths, and it has absolutely nothing to do with what they swear on or whether they swear.
Yeah, it's. I think this is interesting, and I want to, you know, congratulate Jim for bringing up a biblical passage I didn't know about. Like, this, one's new to me. I did not know. And if you think, you know, you have courtrooms, you have, you know, political swearing in. People always hold the Bible and take an oath, which we all know how much an oath by a politician is worth.
Oh yeah,
so
zero.
So, and I just think it's fascinating. I never knew that. And this isn't like something that they could say, well, that was the Old Testament, that doesn't count. This is Matthew. This is one of the Gospels. This is, I believe, probably something Jesus said.
Right.
And so, yeah.
So wait, Earth is God's footstool. So was the Black Death when God got athlete's foot?
Hey.
Heyo. Try the veal. I'll be honest with you. I've never really understood oaths, even when I was religious and when I was doing the New Agey thing, and oaths were actually kind of an important thing. I'm like, okay, I'll do it, but I don't know what it's for, because it's just, it seems like agree to something. Okay, no, we need you to really mean it this time. Yeah. Having the concept of oaths presupposes that you're not going to stand behind your word.
Yeah.
So if you're not going to stand behind your word, what does the oath mean?
Nothing.
It's one of those, is there a magical thing about when I put my hand on a Bible, suddenly it's like,
yeah,
you know, it's like the oath rod in Wheel of Time for you nerds out there.
Right. I mean, in the case of like, what?
I was wondering if you're going to let that just fly past.
Is that the Robert Jordan series?
Yes, it is.
I read it.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, okay. Not all of it, but some of it.
It's done now, so you can actually just finish the whole thing.
Oh, they finally finished it?
Yeah, it is finished.
How many thousands of books?
14 books coming in at an average about 800 pages each.
I think I got through book 7.
Yeah, it's when it starts getting boring around book 8, 9, 10, but then it picks back up at book 11. And I love the idea of a story. It's like, there's three books that are a little dry in there, but if you work through those, it's a really great ending.
Three 800-page books.
Yeah, so 2,400 pages.
2,400 pages.
With one really great part in the middle of it, just to say. But
the Reader's Digest version of that might help here, I think. can I
got too much stuff to do.
Yeah. I love my nerdy books.
Yeah.
But no, in the books, the oath rod is something, is a magical thing that someone swears an oath, and it sets them in their, sets in their skin, so they can't actually, like, physically lie. Like,
well, much like that, I was gonna mention swearing in a witness is like, it's a bunch of window dressing to make it clear that if you lie now, you're going to jail.
Yeah.
And like, I don't think the oath is important. I think the fact that you're going through the motions so that you know that you're going to go to prison if you lie.
Yeah.
That makes sense because it's psychology. But the oath concept itself, I never get.
Yeah, well, the ceremony is important. It can be important, but whether you swear it as an oath or whether you believe in something greater or not, like, the key here to me is, you know, that they want to know if you swear an oath that you believe in something greater than you that you can swear by so that you'll keep your word.
Yes.
That doesn't mean anything.
That doesn't mean anything. I thought you guys had a disagreement about this in the pre-show. I don't remember what it was.
I don't think so. No, we just thought it was interesting. I especially like it. It was a concept that I'd never encountered before Jim wrote in. So
we had so many disagreements. I'm surprised. I'm not surprised.
Okay. Well, I got a couple minutes left. So, very quickly, Future Religion by Jack from Charleston, West Virginia writes, if I were to write a book about my life, it would become a religion thousands of years from now.
Your life is pretty cool. What happened? Yeah. Right? Come on, details, pal.
Are you Neo? Are you the one? What?
Okay, do you mean the one in the Matrix sense or the one in the Jet Li movie sense?
What?
There was a Jet Li movie called The One.
Oh, yeah, that's the one where he hit somebody with a motorcycle.
I think, because the idea is that there are numerous versions of you in various, you know, alternate universes, and if you kill the version of you in an alternate universe, his power gets spread between the others, so the more you kill, the stronger you get.
And if you kill all of them, do you get the prize?
You become the one.
Oh, wow. You don't get the prize.
You become like God.
The quickening doesn't happen.
Xenu.
James Bond doesn't show up.
No, James Bond.
I'm making Highlander references, Dave.
I've never seen
Highlander references.
Never seen it.
Neither have I.
Never seen Highlander?
Never seen Highlander.
No, that's not true. I've seen Highlander, too.
I've seen it.
I hear it's very
the
good.
Show. There's a movie too, isn't there?
The movie is like, I hear, watch the first movie and just ignore everything else.
Yeah, the way Mike talks about it, he says that was a series they ran into the ground. Apparently, much like the Terminator franchise. Yeah. If you've heard about the new movie. Yeah. It makes me kind of sad.
I actually really like the Sarah Connor Chronicles. That was a pretty good show.
Okay.
The what?
What?
TV show, Terminator TV show. It was on for like the Sarah Connor
Chronicles.
Yeah.
So it was Terminator teen drama, really?
It wasn't really teen drama.
It was on the teen drama channel.
It was on Fox.
In their teen drama time slot.
No.
Yeah, no, totally.
Really not.
Okay, because every time I saw it, it looked a bit Buffy.
No.
Oh, I love Buffy.
I don't. And that's all the time we've got for today.
We're just going to go fight now.
Thank you, Noelle. Thank you, Dave. My name is Sam. This is Ask an Atheist. Our website is askanatheist.tv. You can go to our, you can give us a call at 844-753-7842. Email us at questions at askanatheist.tv. Twitter us at askanatheistwa. Now comes the fighting. See you guys next week.
Getting ganged up on here.